Stay connected on your commute. Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder on News Radio WTAM 1100.
Wills, ways to save. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News, is set up at the Consumer Electronics Show out in Las Vegas. WTAM.com, keyword save. You can see where he says, when it comes to screen size, it's go big or go home this year, huh, Granite?
Yes! Yeah! So excited to be here. Setup happening right behind me for the world's largest consumer electronics show, and it hasn't even opened yet. And I'm in here to share my favorite trends with you. And one of the items as a deal in a moment is tied to a larger trend at the Consumer Electronics Show. We all know 4K TVs are the phenomenon, but 8K TVs really the new standard at the Consumer Electronics Show this year. Screens bigger than big. And the bargain I found today allows you to project any image trapped on your smartphone or your computer onto a wall, and you can go as big as you want. The biggest screen you can think of is now accessible from your pocket. Ultra portable, this smart projector, which works with both Android and iPhones and laptops and wherever it is your content happens to be, allows you to project your images onto a wall, a canvas, a projector screen, stage a drive-in movie in your backyard when the weather gets a little bit better. This is one of my favorite CES gadgets, TV on your terms, streamed and ready to rock. This item, which is not a paid product, is on our website. I know. How cool is this? And this is just the start. Stick with me all week long. I will be your eyes and your ears for CES. Happy savings. Back to you.
A great report. See the video, WTAM.com, keyword save. Follow him on Twitter, at Matt Granite. Watch him on 3 this morning. Back here same time tomorrow. He's tracked down a headset that he says transports your senses. Matt Granite from the Consumer Electronics Show out in Las Vegas on Will's Ways to Save. Mike Snyder Sports, mornings 15 and 45 past. Mike is in. Good morning. Where do you want to start?
Wow.
Big night last night.
Yeah, it was a big night. Well, we'll put the bad news, the Cavs. We'll get to them in a moment. Let's get to the national championship game in college football. Alabama down 13 to nothing at the half to Georgia. They change quarterbacks from one freshman. They go to Tua Tagovailoa, who is the backup quarterback. He comes in the game, gives them some energy, but still they trail 20-7 in the third. But they would rally, tie the game at 20. Bama had a chance to win it in regulation when their kicker missed a 36-yarder. To overtime we go. Georgia's kicker makes a 51-yard field goal. Bulldogs up 23-20. Then after getting sacked on a 2nd-and-26 play, freshman backup Bama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa did this.
Here's Tua stepping back, loads up, looks long, throws, end zone,
touchdown,
Alabama, Devontae Smith, touchdown, Alabama, and the Crimson Tide has once again ascended to the top of the college football mountain, their 5th national championship in 9 years, their 17th overall, and for Coach Nick Saban, a career 6th national championship, a number matched only by the legendary Paul Bear Bryant.
Wow, what a win for Alabama, 26-23, and as Nick Saban put it afterwards?
I'm happy for all these folks, I'm happy for our players. This was a great win for our players, and I've never been happier in my life. Never, never.
There you go, and 6 titles in the bank, and never happier than he was last night, and what a great win that was for Alabama, and already, you look at all their freshmen they were playing, they're probably the favorite going into next year. Well, the Cavaliers may be the favorite to win the East, but right now, they are not a favorite against anybody. It was an ugly night in Minnesota.
Butler pulls up, fires a 3 in transition, and it's perfect. Butler now has 21, and Tyronn Lue will take a timeout. He'll do so 3 minutes into the third quarter as the Timberwolves have opened up a 78-47 lead.
Cavaliers get absolutely blown out. They trailed by as many as 41. Final 127-99. It was over early, really. Minnesota jumped on the Cavs for a 20-4 lead, and the Cavs just showed nothing. Here's LeBron.
He's not playing well right now. That's just it.
Well, they are not. They scored just 10 points, and they can't stop anybody. They've got some issues to sort out, and the road trip continues. They are idle now till Thursday when they'll take on a very good Toronto team. In fact, their next 3 games are games that they are up against some good teams, Toronto, then Indiana, and then Golden State here next Monday, and the Cavs have some issues. Also of note, Isaiah Thomas was ejected from the game for a flagrant 2 foul when he clotheslined Minnesota's Andrew Wiggins. We'll hear from IT about that. that at 5:45. News from the NFL. Browns reportedly will interview current Packers Director of Football Operations Elliot Wolf for a role in the Browns front office. And former Browns head coach Mike Pettine supposedly will talk to the Packers about their defensive coordinator's job. Coming up at 5:45, we'll tell you why Alabama's win could be good news for the Cavs. I'll explain. Coming up in sports, home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
North and South are talking. Bill Zinfer joins us on the story on News Radio WTAM 1100. They would be the Koreas. Bill, good morning. What are they talking about?
Well, first of all, the main topic is the Olympic Games. But the elephant in the room, of course, is North Korea's missile and nuclear program. And so far, so good. In these talks, it has been agreed that North Korea will send high-ranking officials, athletes, a cheering squad, performing arts teams, a taekwondo demonstration team, and a group of journalists to the Winter Olympics next month in South Korea. So that's the good news. They also did discuss the North's missile program. South Korea expressed the need to end acts that escalate tensions on the peninsula and resume dialogue to that end. So far, North Korea has not responded to that, but the good news is the talks are just about wrapped up for the day, and a very positive experience all around from what you hear from that region.
Positive. Some, though, in the South, I think, are concerned about these talks. I mean, there's different views, of course, about North Korea, right?
Yeah, the critics to this will say that North Korea is making a strategic move here, designed in part to drive a wedge between South Korea and the United States, which, of course, has had a very hard line against North Korea. South Korea has reached out several times to North Korea to try to get talks started, while President Trump is well known to say, hey, don't worry about it, we'll take care of this guy. So there are some who think this may be a strategic move. I might also add, Bill, that Kim Jong-un was not involved in these talks. He did not even send a message to the delegation. It was thought that maybe he would send some type of statement to these meetings. Was not involved in the talks, but there could be more negotiations in the future.
Our Bill Zinfer on North South Korea, that story this morning. Thanks, Bill.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Washington and Trump. Steve Roberts with me on WTAM 1100. Steve, good morning. Look, every administration has a book, but they normally come out later, second term, right. and maybe they're not as stark as this thing. What's your take on this?
Well, it is unusual. You're certainly right about that. But, of course, this is not written by an insider in the administration trying to sell scores, written by a journalist who had unusual access. I mean, now that the White House is claiming that this is all garbage and it's all a work of fiction, to quote several White House officials on TV yesterday, the fact is that Michael Wolff did have access. He did have tapes. He did have many interviews. There are some flaws in the book. Michael Wolff is not a journalist with an impeccable reputation. But the basic themes ring true, Bill, and this is one of the reasons why it has attracted so much attention. This is hardly the first time that people have questioned the president's mental stability or competence. Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, a Republican, said a few months ago the White House was like adult daycare. Well, when the White House chief of staff, deputy chief of staff, is quoted as saying we have to treat the president as a child, well, that rings true because others have said the same thing. And in fact, the voters understood this as well. I went back and looked at the exit polls in the election last year. And when people were asked, who has the temperament, does Donald Trump have the temperament to be president? 63% said no. And only 35% said yes, which is basically his core base. But 19% of the people who questioned his temperament actually voted for him, which is why he won. So stories acquire power when they play into an existing storyline, and this book certainly does, Bill.
Let me talk to you about managing the country as president, though. Look, his base, I think, as we've talked about, is always with him. I think average folks go through the day, I look at the price of gas, I see my 401k, the Dow's at a record level, ISIS is on the run, there's a lot of positives. Having said that, though, to manage the country, to move legislation, he's got to get support from within his own party at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and you're right, if they keep questioning him, then he'll have a problem moving legislation.
Well, that's true, and he was able to move the tax bill largely because Republicans used a provision of the law which allowed them to basically suspend the rules of a filibuster and pass the bill simply with Republican votes. Let's remember now that Senator Jones has taken a seat from Alabama, the Republican margin in the Senate is only one seat. And they cannot use this provision that they use for the tax bill on other legislation. So they're going to need Democratic support because Democrats have more than enough votes to filibuster any legislation. But in a larger sense, Bill, the question is, has this president been able to move beyond his base to generate a governing coalition outside the Congress and in the country? And the answer is clearly no. If you look at these numbers, 35% thought he had the temperament to be president in the election. 38% said he was qualified to be president. Only 33% of the voters thought he was honest and trustworthy, and that's about where his favorable rating is, somewhere in the mid to high 30s. So he has not clearly expanded his base, and that is a critical story of the first year of this presidency.
Political analyst Steve Roberts on the fallout from Fire and Fury. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, my friend.
Rush Limbaugh with more to say about this and some other stuff, I am sure. Rush follows the news at noon, WTAM 1100. President Trump at the national championship game last night, too. Good ovation.
A good minute.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins us this morning. Proud graduate Benedictine, 8-time Ohio Sports Writer of the Year, reading McCleveland.com and the Plain Dealer. Hi, Terry.
Well, I'm feeling the pressure about the 5 good minutes.
You're the best. Well, it's because you. Even though we spend 5 good minutes, you are still an 8-time Ohio sports writer. See, we'll never catch up with you.
Well, I won the first one after the Civil War, 1866.
What did Lincoln think about the game?
Doubleday just did not have a very good curveball, okay. So that was my first column.
All right, Uncle Terry. Let's jump around. Why not just start with last night? What a night. Let's go Alabama first, and the Tide rolled overtime. First of all, it's a great game, guys.
It was amazing, you know, switching quarterbacks at halftime. And, you know, I did a column about a week ago with Phil Savage talking about Nick Saban and, you know, how they both were together with the Browns back in the early 90s. And, in fact, the 92 media guide on one page is Nick Saban and the next page is Phil Savage. And you look at what Saban has become, you know, Belichick is that guy in the NFL and Saban is that guy in college.
Terry, speaking of quarterbacks, let's get to that. An interesting story you had regarding the Browns not having a shot at Jimmy Garoppolo. Really, the league kind of wondering about Belichick just settling for a second-round pick from the 49ers for him. The Browns certainly would have offered more than that.
Not only the Browns, but other teams, too, because I know for a fact, because I wrote that about 4 days later, that the Browns never had a chance to talk to him. They had talked to the Patriots 2 days before and said, we want them. Call us if you change your mind. Several other teams were calling Meredith to run up to the trade deadline. So all these other teams that were interested in him, in Jimmy Garoppolo, ended up calling each other going, did you actually get a chance to bid on this guy? And they all found out, no, only San Francisco. And whether Bill got angry or whatnot, it's just as odd from the beginning to end.
I agree. There seems like there's something in all these reports with the Patriots.
Yes.
Maybe he wanted him in the NFC, but still you'd think that he'd listen for
Arizona,
more than that.
Yeah, but Arizona wanted him. Denver wanted him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically the only team that got a chance to talk was San Francisco. And they could say, well, you get Brian Hoyer. I mean, look, there could have been a three-way trade. A lot of things could have been done there. It was. You could just tell it was done that morning. And Belichick's like, okay, I got to do it. I'm going to do it. That won't be his story, but that seems to be what happened.
And Garoppolo looks like he can flat-out play, doesn't he?
Yes, and I'm sure that makes Belichick sick, too. Because you almost think, would this have been, if Bill had his way, like when Green Bay, you know, when they traded Brett Favre, you know, 2 years early, before Favre was not quite done, and then went with Aaron Rodgers. You know, my guess is that's probably what Bill would have wanted to do.
That's a tough call, though, man, when you're talking about moving Brady. Yeah. All right, tough times right now for the Cavs. Terry, boy, that was just an embarrassment last night.
Like a layup drill.
It was terrible.
It really was. You know, over the weekend I wrote a column about should they think about DeAndre Jordan, which I was just starting to do because – at first, my early season was, let's see. But, you know, Jordan does bring, along with being an elite rebounder, he does bring some shot blocking and physical presence. This team just stays 28th, 29th in defense. That's not going to do it. And Isaiah Thomas, I love Isaiah, but he's not going to help you defensively.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Fratello at 7:20, we'll talk more camps. Hey, let me get you out here on the Indians real quick. We got the Hot Stove League tonight at 8. And speaking of which, guys, it looks like Kipnis back at second. That's what they're saying?
That's what I'm hearing, but I'm not positive on that one.
Okay.
How's that? Paul Hoynes wrote it, and Paul doesn't tend to make stuff up. So that's intriguing. That really is, because the outfield is still, you know, all over the place. Where do you put Yandy Diaz then?
Yeah. Are these good problems to have, or are we going to have a lineup that we
sure
can't
they need outfielders or something, that's for sure. But bottom line at Kipnis, when he's healthy, he has a good year. When he's hurt, it's a miserable year.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, Terry Pluto, and check out his writing as well. Good columns last 24, 72, the last 72 years, for that matter. All right.
That's right.
Terry, thanks, partner.
Thank you.
Be good. Worst loss of the season for the Cavs last night, 127-99, losing to the Minnesota Timberwolves. Complete Cavaliers coverage, and every Tuesday morning, former Cavs coach Mike Fratello with us, brought to you by Metro Lexus, one of the winningest coaches in NBA history, analyst, of course, for the YES Network and TNT. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. Morning, Coach.
Guys, why don't we just talk about football right now? That was a hell of a game.
Well, let's do that. And let me ask you something, because I'm curious. I mean, look, Saban, he's got 6 national championships. You extremely successful in coaching as well. A lot of psychology. You got to like watching just a coach handle players, whether it's football, basketball, whatever, Mike.
What a I have to choose my words here, but what a move, okay, to make a decision at halftime. I'm not coming back with the guy that has taken me to a couple of national championship opportunities, and I'm going to change and put a true freshman in there. I can't score points right now. We can't throw the ball very well with the guy that's starting for us, so I'm going to put a new guy in the game who's a freshman from Hawaii, and hope that he can hit on a couple of passes, and they wind up with what an incredible ending to that game.
It is a story. It is, and it was a freshman who caught the ball. So I think everybody looks around at Alabama. They're going to be back at it again next year, Mike. But Saban really has just done an incredible job. What a story. I mean, he's right there now with the legendary Bear Bryant, Mike.
You know what I love? Watching him on the sideline, when the offensive coordinator makes a call and it doesn't work, he like turns to the offensive coordinator. He's like, he's got that look in his face like, well, what kind of call was that? What's wrong with you? But I don't know if you noticed, when they threw the one pass that was a huge first down, the offensive coordinator turned and looked at him and wanted to smile and say, like, how'd you like that call? It was kind of funny interaction between the two of them. But that's what pressure of big-time college football does when you have to win a game, when you're playing for the national championship, and you're rolling dice with a freshman that you change in there at halftime.
Well, they got it done. Brian Daboll, by the way, he is their offensive coordinator. He had been here with the Browns with Eric Mangini. All right, Coach, I think our conversation with you to this point tells you what we saw last night from the Cavaliers. It wasn't much. What's going on as you look at this team right now? Because it wasn't just last night, although that was just deplorable last night.
It was. And I think, to me, it looks like they saw this stretch coming up on the schedule of 3 away games, 1 home game against Portland, and then 5 away games. They knew they were just bringing back Isaiah Thomas. They've got a couple guys still out, banged up. And it was almost as if they said, look, let's get through this, and then we'll start over again once we get back after that 8 out of 9 game stretch in the schedule. So when you get in there and you go, what was it, 0-18 between Love, J.R. Smith, and Isaiah Thomas in the first half, 0-18. When you can't make a shot and those guys are running out on their home court, and you know Minnesota's fired up. Thibodeau's a terrific coach. He made a deal to bring 2 of his former players, Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler, in from Chicago. He said, the heck with this developing young guys thing. I've had enough of that. So he changed, brought Teague in, brought Butler in, brought Taj Gibson in, 6th man of the year, I don't know how many times, Jamal Crawford, he brings them in. He said, pretty good decision. I think I'll keep Wiggins, and I think I'll keep that big guy in the middle, Carl Anthony Towns. And that's who he's playing right now. And this is a good, deep basketball team, and the Cavs caught him on maybe their best stretch of playing basketball right now as they approach the halfway point.
Mike, traditionally, Cavs have made a trade before the deadline, added a piece. Isaiah, of course, may be that piece because he's with the team. Do you see the need for something else? Trades are kind of hard to pull off, though, once in a while.
They are, but, you know, you've also got to balance out salary cap things. So you've got to look at whose contracts are good contracts. How much could you get back for that particular piece? Do you like the chemistry of this team? And some of these questions are questions, Bill, that unless we're at practice every day, in the locker room, on the planes, in the hotels, those are hard to answer. Does this group get along? Does this group like each other? Can this group bounce back? I mean, think about our rocky season. I mentioned last night that maybe the most consistent team in the NBA this year has been Toronto. From beginning to where they are right now, they just kind of sail along same way. DeMar DeRozan carries them. They're a pretty good defensive team. They rebound well. They block shots well. But other teams have gone up and down and stretches. Boston starts hot, then they go 6-6, then they come back hot again. We start bad, then we get good, 18 out of 19 wins. Now we hit this stretch right now. It's one of those seasons right now that are a little bit crazy. So can this group get straightened out? Is there enough chemistry there? There certainly is enough offense. We've got to get our defense to be a little bit better on a regular basis.
And they're going to see Toronto in their next game, as you mentioned that, Mike. Just defensively, it's not a question of that they've got to be a great defensive team. As you say, they've got offense galore, and it should get better the more Isaiah Thomas gets blended in. But defensively, Mike, how do they upgrade that? Because they really don't have a lot of defensive-minded players on this team right now.
Mike, you know, there are a number of coaches, one being the late, great Chuck Daly, who believed if you win the rebound battle every night, you're going to win the games. And that's a concern of mine, that teams who are strong and play big up front beat us up, hurt us on the glass. We're out-rebounded last night 56-37, okay, 19 differential. Points in the paint, where big guys normally play, 60-42, 18-point differential there. Those kinds of things concern me because Kevin Love can't do it by himself. And then are we as good with Love and Tristan Thompson? And Tristan Thompson's not a big center. He's a small center who plays hard, works on the offensive boards to get second shot opportunities. But that's the thing that concerns me about these teams that are really good rebounding teams.
Mike Fratello on your Cavs. Coach, thanks. Have a good day.
Appreciate it, guys.
Congressman Jim Renacci with me this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Good morning, Congressman.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, buddy. A little politics before hours. You, of course, running for governor. Interesting, though, in the playing field, just on the ticket, let me ask you this. Josh Mandel says he's going to pull out of the race on the Senate side because of his wife's health. We, of course, pray and hope for all the best for him for that. But the race against Sherrod Brown, I got to say, your name's been mentioned a lot. Any interest in that race?
Well, let me first tell you my thoughts and prayers are with Josh Mandel and his family, and I do want to wish everyone a happy new year. Life changes pretty quickly. My goal is to be the governor of the state of Ohio. I do believe that the career politicians that are running today are not the type of people we need to change Ohio. But as I've said many, many times, if the president of the United States reaches out and contacts me and asks me to jump in that race, I would consider it only at that point. Look, I've said that Washington is broken. I do know that the Senate needs more people to help the president move America forward, but I would need for him to make that call, because otherwise I'm still a big believer. Ohio has its issues. The candidates running are just career politicians that are going to continue to take Ohio in the wrong direction.
Interesting answer. Let me follow up then. You've been to Washington for a few years now. It takes a while to learn the way that city works, and I know you've had some frustrations on the House side, but I got to say, your resume, I think it'd be pretty strong for a Senate seat.
Well, a lot of people are saying that. I've had calls from a lot of donors throughout the country. I've had calls from a lot of entities, groups throughout the country. I've had calls from the Senate committee. So there are definitely a lot of calls have come my way. Again, I want to make sure I can be in a position to make a difference. That's what I've done for 30 years in my business career. If the president would call, I would consider it, because I would need his help really at this late part of the game. But again, my commitment is still to try and change the state of Ohio. And if I can do that in a Senate seat with the backing of the president, because he wants me to do it, I would clearly consider it only at that time.
All right. Now, on to the business. Congressman Jim Renacci with me. Just before Christmas, you got this massive tax change signed by the president. I know it wasn't, maybe it wasn't perfect, but this was still huge. And I got to say, from seeing companies giving bonuses to employees because of it to the way that the stock market is reacting, it looks like it's pretty good news for the economy, Congressman.
Well, I do think the tax bill is a good bill. It's, as you said, it's not the perfect bill. I think the other side has made some real mistakes by saying it's bad. Anytime you can allow taxpayers to keep more of their money, every taxpayer, mostly every taxpayer, will see some effect to their tax return, and most will see some amount of money back in their own pockets. I mean, the average family of four with two children could get anywhere between $1,000 and $2,000 more money in their pocket. That's just good for the economy. And when you reduce the corporate tax rate, I know people get mad that don't understand it, but when we have companies leaving and going to Ireland because they have an 8% tax rate, or going to Canada because they're at 15 or 17, or I'm not exact what number theirs is. I mean, you hear so many of these numbers, but
right.
If companies are leaving, we got to get our rate down to keep companies here and keep them competitive. And I think we're able to do that by dropping the corporate rate down to 21.
All right, Congressman Jim Renacci, I know you're busy. I'll get off the phone in case the president's trying to call. Congressman, thanks. Have a good day, okay?
Thank you. You have a great day as well.
Morning, Jim.
Morning.
Okay, $127.99. Look, it's a loss. It's January. You're laughing, but now Snyder and I yesterday, Mike, we talked about this being a good test. Well, they got blown out last night, Jim.
Well, it's easier to laugh than cry. It's sad. It was sad the way we played on both ends of the floor. We looked a step slow. We just didn't seem focused enough to really get the job done. That starts from our best player all the way down to our bench crew in the first half. In the second half, our bench played a lot better, as they have been for most of the season. But I was very disappointed in our play, because here was a true challenge. This team is number four in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Here was an opportunity to beat a team that hasn't beaten in a long time. And we lost our edge somewhere along the way, guys. Over as far as road games, we have lost our edge.
Yeah, it certainly appeared the Cavs wanted to be anywhere but there last night, Jim. And you made the comment, and we've talked about it, when you look at this team, when they're not making shots, it then affects them at the other end of the floor defensively. And they weren't making shots, and at the other end of the floor, they weren't stopping anybody. That's something that they've got to be able to get a grasp on, don't they, Jim?
I think they do, Mike, because your playoff defense is developed through the course of the season. You know, you can't just turn it on and turn it off because it's the playoffs. You have to have a feel. You got to go beyond your structure defensively. Hey, you can't count on three-pointers going in all the time, but you can count on your defense. And we have not been able to stop people on the road, especially. Even at home, you know, we give up too many points. And we're going to score more points because of IT. But that's not the issue with us. For us to be an elite team, we have to stop people. That doesn't mean we hold them to under 99 points. They slow the pace of the game down. But we can't allow teams to get over 102, 103 points on us a night.
And this one, we saw Minnesota just jump on them early,
yes,
Jim.
Did. Give them credit.
Yeah, and as you did afterwards, and it is a good team. We had Coach Fratello on earlier, and Minnesota is a very good team. But as I said to Bill, I was looking for a little more of a gauge from the Cavs. It just wasn't there. And now you go to Toronto. They've been playing great basketball. I think it's going to be interesting to see how this team reacts, Jim, because that was pretty embarrassing last night.
It was, Mike. It was the most embarrassing game they've played since the time. Who did we play, Mike, that only had five or six players and beat us?
A few years ago, Memphis. Yeah.
Memphis. Well, yeah. That's the way I felt. It hurt me in my gut, because we're better than that. And at some point, Mike and Bill, it goes beyond just having talent and having the best player. You know, it's a guts thing. You got to have pride and guts, and you got to be willing to grind it out if necessary. But when we're not making shots, we don't defend. That is a huge problem for us.
And a staggering halftime stat, J.R., Kevin Love, and Isaiah were zipped for 18 from the field. And I think with Isaiah right now, Jim, it's understandable that he's going to have maybe a step back here and there as he comes back. And I think we saw that for him last night, didn't we?
Oh, yes, we did. But there's no excuse for the other guys. I mean, they're just missed. Mike, they're getting open shots. It's not like they're forcing shots. because of our ball movement, they're getting open looks, and they can't make open looks. That is a huge problem for your starting backcourt. You know, we all times talk about what importance there is in a starting five. Well, that starting five sets the table. And when they don't set the table, that puts a stress on everybody in, everybody that comes in after them. And we can't win like that.
Good strong take from Jim Jones, and he's got the ring to prove it when it is about what he knows. 127-99 loss last night in Minnesota. On to Toronto Thursday, then Indiana on Friday. Jim, thanks, partner.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Tech Tuesday, what's new? Consumer Electronics Show out in Las Vegas. I have Justin Siraj with me this morning. Justin, forget to, hey, Alexa, do something. What's the new trends? What are you seeing out there right now?
Hey, Bill, we're seeing a lot of new industries popping up this year at CES. We have a sports zone where we're kind of introducing tech for athletes, smart venues, esports, and next generation sponsorships. We're also seeing the rise of smart cities where we're seeing the entire connected ecosystem kind of making its way into the smart city sector. And we're also taking a look at high tech retailing where we're exploring the way new ways to shop both on and offline and kind of exploring the life cycle of smart merchandise. So it's going to be an exciting show. It kind of kicks off in about 3.5 hours.
Most of the stuff that you see we'll get our hands on maybe by next Christmas. So you're kind of seeing the trends out there, huh?
Yeah, we're seeing all the trends. We're seeing a lot of the companies releasing prototypes, kind of checking out what consumers want, seeing what might work. And it's kind of like a sneak peek into the next 3 to 5 years as well.
Robots for everything, my health, not just to what, you know, time it is and all with Fitbits. It's just amazing what I'm hearing being talked about out there.
Yeah, intelligence is everywhere, and intelligence is inside everything. We're embedding intelligence as a core element for the user experience. And also, like you said before, the rise of Alexa and voice integration is being employed to tie service and hardware together. So it's really amazing what's happening out here.
Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas underway, and we'll be seeing a lot on tech for the next few days. Justin, I appreciate it. Thanks much.